challenge while you're trying to find your way. Everyone's around, but no one does a damn thing. It brings me down, but I won't let them. If I seem weak, well, you'd be incorrect. And if I don't speak, it's cause I get disconnected. But I won't be burned by the reflection of the fire.
Yeah! and check your baggage at the door.
One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and...
Your final resting day is without me. I breathe and think of brighter days. What about me?
One moment, please.
Oh. Hey, that's something everyone can enjoy.
All right, give me a second. I got one more song I want to play for you guys. Kermie dropped this one on me earlier, and I got to play this for everybody. I just got to switch my screens quick because this was like fucking pure gold. And then we will officially wrap pre-show, I promise. All right.
There's a little secret that you may not know, but if you don't figure it out, you will never grow. So let me put it in a nutshell so that you can see the tiny hats' destruction of humanity. They start the wars.
Tiny hats.
They killed our Lord.
Tiny hats.
They gave us usury.
Tiny hats.
And pornography. They cause inflation.
Tiny hats.
And immigration.
Tiny hats.
Slavery.
Tiny hats.
Social depravity. Communism.
Tiny hats.
Genocide.
Tiny hats.
Slavery.
Tiny hats.
And democide. They cause the famines across the world. They turn little boys into little torture children just for fun. Vaccinated everyone.
They own your education through manipulation. They rewrote history
to make them look like they're not guilty
of starting World War II
and pretending
that the Jew
was the victim in the war which they started.
But if you want to know the truth, it was Germany who
system scam.
So everything you thought you knew is just the fiction of the Jew.
And now they're coming for you in another Bolshevik coup. They're using famine and disease, nuclear war and poverty to create hell on earth to stop the goyim giving birth. Everyone will soon be gone except the chosen.
That made me laugh my ass off so hard. That is like one of the best things I have seen in I don't know how fucking long. We got Natsock Muppets, guys. It's freaking awesome. Oh, Sister Fashbird, how you doing tonight? Can you hear me okay? Ruh-roh. How about you guys in the chat? Can you guys in the chat hear me? I think I'm still coming through. I'm not sure. If you guys can hear me in the chat, give me a thumbs up. Give me a /. Give me a something. Nope. Okay. Fast dropped out. She was obviously hearing me, so I'm sure she will be popping right back on here in a moment. So Okay, here we go.
Can you hear me now?
Now we got you. Now we got you. Okay, cool. We got the Fash Bird.
I was going to say, I really thought I had it down by now, but I can tell you,
it's hard.
I'm very stupid. I am very, when it comes to technology, I'm very stupid, so.
You're not stupid. There is such a steep learning curve with this shit. And like every site you go on, it's like, it seems to work differently. Like if you go in through the FTJ meeting, you know, it's different than if you go on here through Talk Studio, than if you go on through, it's insane. Oh Lord. So how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. I'm sad that our part here that we've been doing about Dr. Mengele and, you know, comparing him to other countries during the war, it's kind of sad to leave this.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of excited to see what comes up next.
Oh, yeah. That's always the fun part. Find out what's coming next. I did want to actually ask you, I was going to ask you off air, but yeah, I'll just ask you on air. I'll put you on the spot. What do you think of, did we want to cover any, I know the Japanese did a lot of crazy shit too. Did we want to delve into that maybe? Or since
actually,
that was like a different part of the war?
Yeah. To be honest, part of my, you know, going down this rabbit hole, oh, many rabbit holes about World War II, I did want to look into Unit 731, which is the Japanese bioweapon program. They were said to have the strongest out of all the countries. Whether they lied about them like they did with Germany, I can't tell you. But it certainly has my interest piqued. I want to know what they were really doing. So I would be up to learn more about them.
Okay, we can always do that. We can jump onto something else. We can go wherever the wind fucking takes us, or, you know, it's kind of our show. We can do whatever we want.
Good boy. Very good point.
What'd you think of that song?
It reminded me of when I was younger, the Muppet.
Yep.
I think it Muppet was the Muppets. The Muppets.
Yep. Oh God. That was so fucking funny. I about died. I couldn't breathe laughing the first time I watched that. So I had to play that. I'll be honest, it's probably getting played as the outro song tonight too, because I love it that fucking much.
I'm okay with that. I am one of those people who can listen to the same song over and over again and
right?
Just enjoy it as if I've never heard it before.
When a song grabs you, it just grabs you, you know? So, oh, let's say hi to our chats. Whoops, clicking the wrong button there. Luckily, it wasn't like a bad click. So we got a couple people watching / listening along over here on 88. Looks like Coondog, Kermy, and, well, there's me. So, hi, guys. And there's probably some people lurking, too, which is cool. We all love lurkers. And everybody listening on Crewbot, I know Joseph said he was going to be listening. Arian Eagle is rocking out with the Crewbot tonight, as well as kind of jumping in and out of the chat over on FTJ, where we also have, let's see, well, Joseph jumped in to say hi there, Arian Eagle, Miss Hitler, Thomas E. Dwyer, Riot Earth, Unobtrusive, and Kermy. And I guess the guys were trying to do a mosh pit earlier, and I'm like, y'all are a bunch of overgrown teenagers. You're going to get hurt. Stop that.
Yeah, I never had the guts to jump in myself, but I did enjoy watching them. I truly enjoyed it at the shows, but yeah, I knew my limits. There was no way.
I wasn't allowed to go to the kind of shows that had mosh pits, honestly. So I missed that whole thing in my youth.
No, my mother would let me go if like one of my cousins took me. And then when I got there, my cousin's like, well, do whatever the hell you want to do. just meet me back at the van by the time it's to leave. It's like, okay.
I mean, I can't say much because honestly, I fell asleep at a ska concert once. And how you fall asleep listening to ska at a bajillion decibels, I don't know. But apparently I did. So, there's that. I was really tired. Oh,
I get it. It's okay.
Well, it wasn't like a regular concert. It was the local Christian radio station that played cool kid Christian music. And this is not a rip up against Christians. It was just this particular station. Cause you know, they had like Christian rap, Christian rock, Christian ska apparently. Well, a friend of mine got tickets and she's like, let's go check this out. And it was at the one local Christian high school. And so I was like really tired. I went up in the balcony and put in some earplugs and just zonked out right on the bench.
So I never got into the Christian music. It doesn't appeal to me because I don't look to music for my beliefs,
right,
for my religious beliefs, for my, you know, for my own personal standards. If nothing, I don't look to music for that. It's just, you know, entertain me or soothe me or bring me back to better times.
Yeah. This is the late 90s and I forget what all. The biggest trouble Christian music always had, at least then, I haven't listened to it in a long time, was the production quality just was not there. That was its biggest struggle. Some of it wasn't bad. It was decently done musically. It's just it either hits you or it doesn't. So,
yeah.
But, oh, my. So I'm outside. If you guys get ambient noises, I apologize. They're building something across town where they've been flying shit in with choppers. So if it gets too bad, I will hit the mute button.
Everyone likes ASMR. Come on.
I am in my backyard. This is my backyard. That's one of my trees, y'all. Fash got to see my backyard. She can tell you there's trees all around it.
It's a great backyard. Perfect backyard. Except for the bees.
Except for the bees. The bees are fuckers.
Yeah.
They're not even honeybees. Like, they're not even, like, being useful.
See, they don't do anything then.
Tiny you can just squish them.
You could squish them with impunity. No one's going to say anything. It's like, I don't remember the last time this bee pollinated a rose. That's it. It's gone.
All they're doing is pollinating the dandelions that blow into my yard from my neighbor's yard, which is really irritating.
Oh.
So where are we going tonight? We're going to Russia tonight, right?
Yeah, I found a couple of. I don't know if anyone uses the website academia.edu. So people like, J. Otto Pohl will turn in their thesis, their master's degree thesis or any academic papers they have written, and it goes to this website. And it's got two tiers, you know, you get free or you can get paid. I do find some cool articles from this website, and I did come across one that was about poisoning. Yes, that's the website.
Yeah.
It was about poisoning being used by Russia.
Okay.
Essentially beginning from 1921 up to today, ending with that. Do you remember a couple of years ago, maybe a few more, that Skripal and his daughter...
I remember when that happened. Yeah,
Sergei and Yulia Skripal were poisoned, and it's believed that obviously it was Russians who did it. But this has been going on since 1921, and it just got worse and worse, especially during the Cold War. So this is not necessarily just bound to World War II, because I believe during the actual war, Russia did not play with chemicals. They weren't known for dropping, they weren't known for dropping lots of gas on anyone or anything like that. Not that they were angels. And
right.
What they did to individuals, yeah, that's quite different. But so during between 1928 up to the beginning of the war, it was just testing things. They wanted to test a poison. They essentially wanted a poison that could be inserted into a person that was tasteless, smellless, couldn't be found in an autopsy, and played like it was a natural death.
Okay. So they really got into like the biological aspect almost.
Yes. So let's just go back to the beginning here. I have a little timeline. I wanted to go through this because some of it is confusing, and I'm not going to get too in depth with it because there were a lot of changes, government changes, when you moved from Lenin to Stalin, There was a great purge and all that stuff. So departments change names and all that. Essentially, from 1928 to the 1930s, they were really interested in poison as a covert assassination tool.
Okay.
A development of specialized toxicology capabilities, which could be used on those who escaped Russia, or anyone that the higher ups in the Communist Party felt could be a, they could cause problems for communism. And then, this is where, initially it was started by Cheka. Cheka was in charge of it. And then came the KGB and the NKVD. These are all synonyms for the names of their central intelligence. I don't know Russian. I'm not going to even try to pronounce them, but I'm sure we've heard KGB and NKVD before.
Oh, yeah.
So at this point, yes, it was used for internal enemies, suspected dissidents, regime consolation. Let me see here. There's no evidence at that time of actual assassinations.
Okay.
This was more of a time of developmental and experimental times. So we leave this part. We get to the Stalin era of expansion, still run by the NKVD. They were more concerned now with overseas assassinations, not just poisons, but bioweapons as well, diseases. This was one of four laboratories, though I believe this one was hidden, of things they had been working on for a long time, bioweapons and toxins and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
See here. It became an issue because in 1939, Stalin started his Great Purge. And this is where we can kind of connect some of the dots, which I thought was interesting. So, Lenin was taken out. I believe that Stalin kicked him out because he thought he was now a threat to the security. But not only was Lenin taken out, but do you remember Yagoda?
I've heard a little bit of him. I've never really studied a lot of the Russian aspect. I've dug a little bit into the Eastern Front during the war itself, but as far as actual Russian history, no. So again, I know the name, but that's about it.
Yeah, I can say the same. It's just that Yagoda was well known for about 10 million executions under Lenin. He was in charge of the initial laboratory working on these poisons. Okay. Stalin took him as a possible threat and had him executed. We'll see within this whole history that there's just a lot of paranoia. They didn't trust each other. One person said, they saw you doing this, or you said something against communism. That was it. Under communism, especially under Stalin, funny enough, the only time an individual's worth came into question was if you had escaped Russia and you were blabbing about communism.
Okay.
Because the communist doctrine states by all means you must protect communism and continue to spread communism. And that includes murder.
Yeah.
So if you spoke out individually, you were sought after, they would find you, they would poison you. Even though in the country itself, your individual worth was nothing.
Right.
You were just, working the fields like so many others, and you were just a number until you said something that was wrong. And then you would be sent to one of their prisons and used as a guinea pig for the poisons program.
Yeah. One interesting thing that struck me about, you know, you were just saying how the whole point of communism, or one of the big things, is you protect it at all costs and you spread it at all costs. Reminds me very much of Islam. Islam kind of operates on the same principle, like to a fanatical sense, but like coming from a religious angle as opposed to like the communist ideology. And it makes sense when, you know, you realize, well, they're both basically puppets of the Jews.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I remember once reading that Carl pointing out the similarities between Judaism, which is communism, but Judaism and Islam. Mm-hmm. Hatred of dogs, no respect for children. It went on and on. So essentially, he believes that Islam is a universalized form of Judaism.
Pretty much. I'm not real super familiar with Islam, but I do know like it supposedly kind of descends from the whole story of Abraham, and he and his wife were like ancient when they had their son Isaac, I believe. But, you know, God told them, oh, you're going to have a child, but they're not getting pregnant. They're like, well, what's going to happen? So Sarah basically gives her husband her maid servant and says, well, here, just fuck her, make a baby with her. That's how we get our kid. And God comes back and was like, no, that was wrong. So then here's this little baby that then Sarah's jealous after her boy is born. So they kick the baby and his mom out. And that's where Islam descends from. So yeah, they're even in their own stories, they kind of say right there, like, hey, yeah, no, we're connected.
Right. And if you, at least I this is what I've learned. It could have changed by now, but I always believed that Saudi Arabia and Israel were close because they're essentially cousins, the Wahhabists yep. and the Jews. So for them to try to turn around and say, oh, Muslims are going to kill us all, they hate Jews and this and that, it's just bullshit. And they're working off the feelings of the, you know, Christian Zionists. Oh, you hate Jews, you're bad. Of course, there are some of us who do work off the fact that they're just fucking pedophiles and they murder people.
Yeah.
But I always thought it was funny how the Jews claim, oh, Muslims are so bad, they're so scary and horrible. But it's like, well, you taught them. That makes you even worse.
Yeah. They're like the shock troops of the Judaic world in a way.
Yes. It's kind of, yeah. In the sense, yeah, the SA wasn't maybe the brightest bunch. They weren't the most, morally upstanding group, but they had a job to do.
They served a purpose, and unfortunately, we're seeing that with the Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, they're more loud and obnoxious than even the Jews sometimes in a individual capacity. So, like, if you have that one loud fucking sand nigger going, oh, you don't have haram food. Why do you not have blah, blah, blah. This is haram. You need halal food. And it's just like, they get to be loud and obnoxious and browbeat you that way, while the Jew just stands over there and whines and goes, leave it, you know.
Yeah.
Different tactics.
No, whatever the hell you want to do in your own countries, go for it. I couldn't care less. You don't want to drink alcohol. You don't want to eat cow or pig or whatever the hell. I don't care. Just don't do it here. Get the fuck out. Oh, so then we hit 1940. That's when Leon Trotsky is assassinated. Again, it's believed that he is some form of a danger. That's the communist doctrine, is that they acknowledge and push that all that, you know, whatever you need to do to keep communism going, to keep spreading, and, you know, to keep respect, is murder. Mm-hmm. They have absolutely no problem murdering anyone. And I believe that's why Stalin would not allow soldiers to come back from World War II if they were caught as POWs.
Yep. You're tainted now, basically.
Yeah, you were weak. You didn't kill the enemy. You let them catch you, and then you walked away. Bit fucked up. But even worse is knowing that UK sent 5 million of them back to Russia, knowing exactly what Russia was going to do to them.
Yeah.
That's pretty screwed up. They believe that Leon Trotsky was killed by an ice axe. Not poison, but they do believe that it was perpetrated by an NKVD agent named Ramon Mercado. He was actually, if I remember correctly, he was killed in Mexico.
Okay.
Because he had I guess he had left or something.
Reminds me a little bit, like, the little bit I know about, because Cuba, obviously, you know, Castro, they've been communists for how long? The whole revolution there, you saw the same thing, the same pattern of, you know, the revolutionaries take over and they immediately start killing each other off. And I guess the thinking, or the so-called thinking there is, well, of course, these guys are dangerous. They know how to enact a successful revolution. So now they're a danger to you.
Yeah.
And when you kind of look at it historically, you do see that a lot throughout history. I think that was one of the reasons why when the NSDAP rose to power, they were careful about how they did it. You didn't see the same thing. They weren't having that kind of a revolution, you know?
Right. Okay.
Sorry, I keep distracting you.
Oh, no. No, that's okay. I'm trying to be fancy on my computer. I finally got Telegram and everything on here, so got nice. A lot of Windows going, but... All right, so we had a basic timeline, but I wanted to go through some of the specifics.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, it started with the Cheka, and then it moved to the NKVD, and then the NKGB in the late 1930s and into the 40s. The intelligence agency was... responsible for assassinating any members of Russian organizations. I guess during their revolution, groups of people left and created their own groups of people who were anti-communism. So they were sought after to be murdered, to be assassinated, as well as members of other anti-Soviet political groups. They were just very scared of it. I don't get it. You think a nation as big as USSR with all its people in it, you really wouldn't need to worry about one person, but I don't mean it kind of comes off as insecure, you know?
But it's a culture of constant fear on every level in every aspect of life.
Yes. Let's see here. Yes, so the basis for the assassination policy was the Soviet communism moral doctrine, which implied that state security and Communist Party leadership were justified in using any means necessary to protect Soviet communism from its enemies, and that includes murder. According to them, we judge the moral image of a man from the point of view whether his actions are in accordance with the needs of the construction of communism. And again, that instantly made me think of the POWs.
Yeah.
And my so many turned around and fought with Germany. I believe there were about 990,000 Russians who defected and decided to fight with Germany during World War II. Which makes sense. Why would I want to fight for a nation that's willing to kill me when I get home because I wasn't shot by a German?
Mm-hmm. We kind of see, I'm trying to think back the last couple of years, this whole Ukraine-Russia debacle. You still see a little bit of that mentality, like the little bit of news clips that you see coming out of that war front, you know, where... how many Russians, when they came up against Ukrainian troops, were just like, fuck it, I'm out. I'm not fighting, putting my gun down. They don't want to go back. It makes you wonder if there's still that mentality and they're treated differently when they go back today.
To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this whole concept of a poison's laboratory, it's still active today.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
I mean,
you said earlier, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't see why they would stop any other process that was working for them. And, you know, I'm not going to knock people who like Putin as the leader. I'm not. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, I've seen a lot of pictures of him with the Chabad Lubavitch. And the bit I know about them is that they are purely satanic. They are the worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. Put aside the argument of whether he's Jew or not, mm-hmm. he's paid for the Jews. He's owned by the Jews. So to me, I don't hold him up as some great leader. They too have Holocaust denier laws there and everything else. So no, I don't consider him a savior. He's not going to be able to help us.
No, he's even outright stated one of the reasons for going into Ukraine, attacking Ukraine, amongst the many different reasons he stated, is to denazify.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically still hunting Nazis. Again, I'm not gonna knock anyone who likes him, but me, I'm not a fan.
No, and that whole we need to denazify. Now, if we just look at, Azov, was that not that org that was running around with the tattoos? Mm-hmm. Azov, I believe.
Yep.
It was literally being run by a Jew, funded by a Jew, which I just thought was funny. But it seems like much of Ukraine is run by Jews, just like Russia. It's just another, let's make money from both sides. But I had heard about the Jews wanting to use Ukraine as second Israel.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at where the Ashkenazi Jews in Europe were predominantly and came out of, same neck of the woods. A lot of the stories we have of well poisonings, a lot of them are in Ukraine. Even modernly, there's been some suspected cases of well poisoning.
Right.
They want that spot for some reason. And I'm not sure if it's purely just resource driven. I mean, Ukraine was known as the breadbasket of Europe. So mm-hmm. some of the best agricultural land was Ukraine and that neck of the woods. So I don't know if it's purely just that or if they have other reasons.
Maybe they're bullshitting about the Samson option. Maybe they want to be closer to Europe to take it. Or maybe it's because of World War II and, you know, the Ukrainians fought hard for the Germans. They mm-hmm. were not fans of the Jews. So I guess maybe there are some more real legitimate reasons, but there's got to be a reason for it. Mm-hmm. My first thought, like I said, is I think that they could easily bomb us,
mm-hmm.
bomb Europe.
Yep.
Because I don't necessarily believe the Samson option. No, when it comes to big talkers with beady eyes and crooked ears, I believe they like to just use fear. So if I can get you to believe something is true, that's all I need to do.
Oh, yeah. They spin everybody up. They get them saturated in fear and paranoia. And then everybody runs around like chickens with their heads chopped off. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically.
I see here from Filthy. He says that Ukraine is child trafficking capital of the world. That I could see that being true, but then again, Israel is the world capital of skin bank and organ trafficking.
Children
are needed, I guess, for their trafficking. But
yeah,
but I'm sorry, what were you going to say? I got.
Oh no, you're fine. I was just going to say, when it comes to human trafficking in general, don't ever think that Asia, the different Asian countries, are not right at the top of the list themselves. It's really bad over there as well.
Well, of course, just as I would never go there on vacation, they have brothels or in children prostitutes. It's absolutely horrible in some of these places. Now, yeah, I've never been there in person, but I can watch documentaries, I can see pictures, I can read articles. And the fact that, especially like in India, you can walk into into one of those caves or whatever that they live in, and there's children waiting to be picked up for the next job because they're so poor that they got to sell their own children. So I wouldn't trust any place. Just like I tell my mother, you will never catch me going on vacation to a third world country. I don't care what pretty caves they have or what nice mountains they have.
You can look at pictures on Google Earth or some shit if you want to see them. Like, I don't need to go there.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's really bad. I think people tend to not think about human trafficking in terms of Europe for some reason. And I'm sure it happens. I don't know if they just hush it up or they're just better at hiding it.
They did make the Hostel series. I'm not sure if you're aware of the Hostel.
Oh, the
series.
Movies?
Yeah. Which were in the Easter Block somewhere. And of course, I don't take my history from horror movies, but something along those lines I could easily see happen, because we know that Israel would bring women from the Eastern Bloc, bring them to Israel and say, well, now you have to work to get back home. Mm-hmm. And of course, they would never, ever earn enough to get back home.
No.
So I don't take my history from movies.
Right.
But we know that this is what happened.
I made the mistake of watching the first one of those movies, and I sat there and went, the fuck did I just watch, and why?
But you know what you didn't ask?
What?
You didn't say that, oh, there's no way this happens. You never said, oh, this couldn't possibly happen. This is just a fever dream, a Jew's fever dream. Yeah. No, you can't tell me that doesn't happen. We know people do, they hunt humans. Mm-hmm. There's actual hunting trips for humans.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yes. Sorry, one second. It's not the day job. Okay. I can ignore that. Woo! I swear to God, if I'm interrupted on another stream, I'm going to cry. So.
All right, here. Let me see here. Yeah, so there are instances of extrajudicial state-sponsored assassination of enemies of the Soviet communism. It did occur throughout World War II. I don't think as often as it probably could have, but for example, a Soviet assassination team hunted down Leon Trotsky, the leader of the 1917 October Revolution, who lost favor with Stalin. I don't know what they fought over. Russia, as USSR, is not my strong point, but Stalin had him tracked down to Mexico City. He had a house down in Mexico City in 1940 and assassinated him by a blow to the head with an ice axe.
Mm. Now my head's twinging in sympathy.
I mean, I suppose it's kind of a fitting way.
Yeah.
But
having flashbacks to horror movies now.
So we're going to get to a place called Laboratory Number One. Mwahahaha. So it was nicknamed the camera with a K, not a C, camera, which means cell. And this was established in 1938. And this was their poison research laboratory. Like I said before, their goal was to create something that could instantly kill a person and never be found, and just see them as dying from natural causes. The researcher was a man named Dr. Grigory Myronovsky. So for those who can speak better Russian, it's Mairanovsky. So I'm saying Mironovsky. He has been likened to Stalin's Magala, and also known as Dr. Death. He was savage. He was absolutely savaged. He ran the laboratory from November 39th through 1951, where he was then relieved from his duty for by arrest because he was not trustworthy anymore either. It was just everything, everyone's so afraid, and everyone's an enemy.
Yeah. Trying to see if I can find a picture of... How do you spell that guy's name again?
Mairanovsky.
Mairon...
A-N.
A-N.
O- O-V-S-K-Y.
S-K-Y. Grigory Mairanovsky. I learned Russian accent from Vi and Bullwinkle.
Sounds a hell of a lot better than mine. So he's known for performing inhumane and cruel medical experiments on unsuspecting prisoners who were condemned to death, as well as anyone on the kill list as enemies.
Would you look at the nose on this guy?
Yeah, he doesn't look trustworthy to me.
Ears are a little low.
Yeah. I'm not shocked that he'd be a Jew. It is a bit of an insult, though, to Mangala.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So this guy actually had his lab moved so he'd be closer to a prison, so... he could easily take the prisoners because they'd die. Some of them would die within 15, 20 minutes. These were experiments that were already tested on animals, and now they wanted to test them on people. So they would be told in a straightforward manner that there was a medical examination about to be done, and then without their knowledge, they would instantly be injected with poison. They were the deaths were often excruciatingly painful and agonizing. No one thought twice about them because you always had to take into account the big picture of communism, which is international.
Yes.
Just to keep spreading everything. So they had a man come down who had just recently been arrested by Stalin, going by the last name Ogins. He, because he was a prisoner, suffered the same fate. But I wanted to bring up... He was given a special poison. Let me see. And I wanted to... I'm trying to remember where I put it. He was given a special poison that would make you physically weak. Let's see here. Sorry, just 1 minute. I have so many notes.
Come on, you've seen me trying to shuffle through tabs and shit. Don't ever feel bad.
All right, so we'll... It was this poison called Curare, C-U-R-A-R-E. This came it was a resin from a tropical plant, strychnos. The physical effects included loss of voice and strength. Keep that in mind. So loss of voice and strength, loss of muscle weakness, prostration, labored breathing, you would start to collapse, your organs would start to shut down because the muscles were no longer working. And you then became unable to cry or scream for help. But the entire time you were conscious, and you would die in about 10 to 15 minutes after a sufficient dosage. You see, you are watching yourself die. You see what's Damn. Happening. And that, so you see yourself happening. You see yourself dying. Your muscles are all weakening. Your ears, your legs. You become like flaccid. You become a limp person because you've lost your muscle strength. And then you start to feel your organ shut down, and you get to be alive for the entire thing.
That's just fucked up. It's just pulled up the Wikipedia page on that. I did notice it said it was used by indigenous peoples and indigenous to like Central and South America. Maybe that's why they wanted to spread communism to Cuba so bad.
Oh, there you go. Can you imagine that though? You got a bunch of fucking mulatto shitheads down there, and they all have access to this.
Yeah. They're still dipping their, you know, flint arrows in it, though, so I'm not that worried about them.
Oh, just to step back. Just to step back real quick. Before Myronovsky took over Laboratory Number One, prior to that, under Lenin, it was actually called the Special Room. I thought that was really interesting. Because I think it sounds real pretty, real interesting, but it's not exactly that. There was a name by Kazovkov. He was the actual first laboratory director.
Okay.
And he headed it until 1938. And like I said, that's when he and Yagoda, which... he was the chief of Soviet intelligence, the mass murderer of 10 million people, were accused of establishing a poison laboratory. So they were running a laboratory, a poison laboratory, but then they were accused of establishing a poison laboratory. And they were both executed as part of Stalin's purges. And hence, that's where Laboratory One came from. And that laboratory was divided into two divisions, the toxicology department and the bacteriological division. They wanted to be able to use bacteria or viruses to create second generation, more deadly bacteria and viruses.
Gotcha.
Yet, so they did perform experiments on living people, prisoners, and persons about to be executed to determine the effectiveness of various poisons and injections, as well as the use of hypnotism and drugs in interrogation techniques, which kind of made me think of the U.S. with their MK Ultra LSD. In a way, that's what it made me think of. What yes. they were doing with hypnotism, I couldn't tell you. I don't exactly believe you could be hypnotized. Maybe some can. I guess I've never been, but I just thought that was all interesting, though.
Oh, absolutely. It's fascinating.
And then in 1951 to 1953, those leaders of Laboratory One were arrested and sentenced to prison. Again, because they weren't trustworthy. So the new laboratory was named Laboratory 12, while some would actually call it Laboratory X. Interesting thing about this laboratory is that they developed poison bullets.
Damn.
Now, maybe our guys or our friends in chat knows anything about warfare, but I don't know if they're the first people to ever come up with poison bullets.
I'm not sure. I think a couple of our guys in our military, actually Reaper just popped into 88 chat, so I know he is, and I think some of the guys over here in FTJ might be as well. So if you guys are vets and do have some knowledge that you can share that isn't classified, please drop that in the chat. It is interesting though, because like they, you know, some, I think it was Filthy was even joking about, and others were saying they, you know, natives in different areas put these toxins that they get from nature onto everything from like blow darts to arrows, you know, in hunting and warfare. So it's an old concept, and it seems like maybe the Russians just brought that into the modern age. Like, okay, we don't use arrows, let's put them on bullets.
Right.
So Reaper says hi, by the way. He's like, I see you.
Hello.
I didn't know if you had the chats up. So
I'm glad you could make it, Reaper. Well, I have FTJ up at the moment.
Okay.
But so this is where it kind of gets interesting, because I didn't know this history. I don't know the connection between Bulgaria and Russia, but let's get into it.
Ooh, yes.
So yeah. Laboratory number 12 had provided the Bulgarians with scientific and technical assistance. They had developed ricin, which I don't think they were the first or the last. I believe Germany had plenty of ricin stockpiled for just in case, for shit hits the fan, maybe bad moments. But so they had this, a lethal biotoxin, and it was a delivery system for the poison. To deliver the poison, they used an umbrella converted to discharge the pellet from its tip into a person. Okay. The plan was for a Bulgarian assassin to shoot a tiny ricin pellet into a dissident named Georgi Markov in September of 1978.
Damn.
Did Reaper smack a nigger today?
Yeah, I was just going to type that in the chat. Yeah, Reaper, Sniper's Ghost wants to know if he smacked a nigger today. Jew Funders like this today end in a Y. You guys got a laughing emoji back, all right?
So, and I found two in a 2017 news article, an American newspaper reported 38 prominent Russians were victims of unsolved murders or suspicious deaths since the beginning of 2014. To just kind of break this down, there were 10 high-profile critics of Russian President Putin. There were 7 diplomats, 6 associates of Kremlin power brokers who had a falling out, often over corruption. Again, we see that everyone's corrupt, but no one's corrupt. And I don't get that. That would be very frustrating. And 13 military or political leaders involved in the conflict in eastern Ukraine, including commanders of Russian-backed separatist forces. 2 are possibly connected to a dossier alleging connections between President Trump's campaign staff and Kremlin officials. And like I mentioned earlier, too, in March 2018, Russian intelligence agencies poisoned former Russian intelligence agent and British double agent Sergei Skripal and his adult daughter with a nerve agent in Britain. I believe they were drinking tea. I think they were out having tea. The latest of an apparent ongoing campaign to silence those who oppose Putin. Again, yeah, I know some people like him, but, and of course, I can tell you though, for much of this information I received from a thesis, and the thesis was based on a lot of government documentation from the Cold War. So I know we need to take this with a bit of grain, with a grain of salt, because first you won't find much on the USSR from the USSR. They seemed to have gotten rid of a lot. So there wasn't much, at least from what I can find, there isn't much direct evidence of things. So the man who wrote this thesis, he did use a lot of U.S. government documents, but other sources as well, and from Russians who had escaped Russia and made it to the U.S. Congress and told them about what was going on. So it's a mixture, but forgive me if some of this doesn't make sense to you, or if I'm wrong. I want to know the truth. So if anything comes up and you're like, wait, that doesn't make sense, let me know.
Real quick, actually, Reaper just said, in response to our question about, guys with military experience, he heard about sarin gas being a supposed chemical threat in the sandbox when he was there, but it was never exposed. Dirty Iraqis were the true biohazard encountered. I can believe that 100%.
Yeah.
Oh, and Sniper, Reaper says, give him until Friday, because he didn't manage to smack a nigger yet, but give him until Friday.
Oh, he's got still time.
He's got plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Let's see here. I wanted to go over a few of the assassinations that can be verified with some evidence. Let's see. Oh, come on, where are you?
Guys, let me know if you can hear the helicopter buzzing around in the background. If so, I can mute my mic when I'm not talking. I hear it loud and clear, and it's got me all sorts of are you spying on me? They're not replacing power poles, but conspiracy brain.
That's what they want you to think.
It is. It is what they want you to think. Especially because one of the helicopters they're using looks suspiciously like the same silhouette as a Black Hawk. I'm not an expert, but I'm just saying. I looked up pictures.
Whenever I see them, I just give them the finger. So I figure either way, either you're dropping mosquitoes, poison, or you're the military. So I'm like, well, I think I'm pretty safe either way.
Yep.
All right. So we have, we know about Lenin, a 1978 umbrella assassination of the Georgi Markov with the ricin pellet. It's poisoning of defectors in Europe attributed to Soviet-linked actors using experimental toxins designed for undetectability and rapid death. Let me see here. Yes, so we know that there were a lot of them done during the Cold War. This, I don't think it was initially started in 1928 for the Cold War, but it definitely came in handy for them. Okay, here we go. 1957, first major confirmed Cold War poison-style assassination case was Bogdan Stashinsky.
Did I lose you? Are you still there?
No, I'm here. I'm just going through my notes.
I'm a little paranoid myself today just because being on the back patio, I'm hoping the Wi-Fi signal stays strong enough, but it seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, we didn't have any issues last time. Okay, wait a minute here. Oh, here they are. Okay. So Russian writer Maxim Gorky and his son Max Peshkov during the trial of the 21 in 1938. The chief, Yagoda, admitted that he poisoned Gorky and his son and unsuccessfully tried to poison his own deputy. The attempted poison of Yesov was later officially dismissed as falsification, but Molotov believed that the poisoning accusations were true. Yagoda was never officially rehabilitated, but he ended up being killed anyways. Some believe that Stalin himself actually fell prey to it by associates. He was poisoned by the NKVD chief Beria based on the interviews of a former Stalin bodyguard and numerous pieces of circumstantial evidence. Stalin planned to dismiss and execute Molotov and other senior members of the Soviet regime in 1953. But apparently he was poisoned by a senior bodyguard. That's actually, I guess, written about in his daughter's memoirs.
Okay.
Georgi Dimitrov, the first communist leader of Bulgaria, abruptly fell ill in 1949, and died in a Moscow hospital. According to some historians, they believe that Dimitrov was poisoned by the Soviet authorities on the orders of Stalin due to his part for proposing a Balkan federation. Nikolai Koklov, a KGB defector who survived a thallium poisoning attempt in Frankfurt in 1957. So alleged other victims are Lechi Ismailov, a Chechen rebel commander, sentenced in Russia for 9 years in prison, died in September 2002 after an unsuccessful attempt to recruit him as an informer by the FSB. Shortly after being transferred from the prison to a regular prison, he had a farewell cup of tea with the FSB officer, after which he fell fatally ill, lost his hair, and died shortly after. See, Roman Zhipkov, a Russian businessman close to Putin and gang circles, he was taken out. Amir Katab, who was poisoned by a fast-acting nerve agent, possibly sarin, or a derivative transferred on a letter delivered by a recruiter. There's a whole bunch of them. So Novaya Gazeta investigated apartment bombings allegedly directed by the Russian Secret Service and the Three Whales corruption scandal, which involved high-ranking FSB members. He died from a fast and mysterious disease shortly before his departure to the U.S. to testify before FBI about what was going on. His medical documentation was classified as state secret by the Russian authorities.
I feel like they classify everything as state secret.
Yes, definitely. And then there was a Viktor Kalashnikov, a freelance journalist and former KGB colonel, and his wife Marina in December 2010. The hospital in Berlin discovered that they had been poisoned. They went to the hospital and it was determined that they had been poisoned with mercury.
Jesus.
Yeah. And they believe it happened while he was when he was at work. Karina Mushkalenko, a human rights lawyer who defended some Putin descendants in court, she fell ill from mercury poison in October 2008, just prior to the hearing regarding the assassination of Anna. Let's see here. The third president of Ukraine, was found to have been poisoned by the TCDD dioxin during the 2004 Ukrainian presidential election campaign. Bit fucked up. In 2009, he accused Russia of shielding a number of witnesses to his poisoning and called on the Russian government to turn them over, which I'm sure they didn't. Oh, there's just so many of them. I'm not going to keep going through them all, but there were some planned victims. They believe the president of the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, Tito, in the late 1940s, the laboratory manufactured a powdered plague for use in a small container, and where the assassin was vaccinated against the plague. The device was to be used against Tito, but MGB agent Iosif, who had previously organized the assault on the villa of Leon Trotsky and now received the assignment to kill Tito, was recalled after the death of Joseph Stalin. And lastly, the first democratically elected president of the Republic of Georgia, Zivad Gamsakhuria, according to former deputy director Ken Elbeck, this laboratory was possibly involved in the design of an undetectable chemical or biological agent to assassinate the elected president. BBC News reported that some friends believed he committed suicide, although his widow insists that he was murdered.
Starting to think, like, did you ever hear of Lucretia Borgia from, like, several hundred to thousand plus years ago? She was known as, like, one of the most deadly poisoners in history. I'm starting to think that, like, all Russians must descend from her. They are so poison happy.
They are. I mean, of all the things I've read about, I mean, they were locked in tunnel vision. Like, we need poisons that no one will be able to detect.
Yep.
And it's like, and I kind of get it. They want to see people suffer. Mm-hmm. And some of it's just fucked up. I just can't imagine being in the process of dying and not being able to scream out help. It's like those people. Have you ever heard of locked-in syndrome?
Oh my God, yes. Creeps me out.
That scares the shit out of me. You could wake up one day and you can't move your body. You're completely conscious, but you can't talk.
Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
Yes, I have.
Like, that's bad enough. Like,
right?
I can't imagine. And I'm sure, like, they know the whole time why this is happening, which has got to make it even worse.
So, you know, they tried to explain to me, well, we think you were just really, really tired that day, and the medication you had been on just made it worse. And it's like, that might have explained it the first time, but the second time, no. Yeah. It's so, like, well, for me, I can't even tell if I'm awake or asleep, and it's like, scary as all hell. Did I do that? Did I get up and look to see if there's someone in my house awake, or was I asleep? The whole thing is just fucked. But I can't imagine going out that way. But I included a link for a video. Could we put that on?
Yeah, absolutely.
This will go into, okay, so there was another part of Russian experiments that I personally did not want to research or get into depth with, and I'm sure there will be plenty in the chat, and you as well, sister, that you probably wouldn't want to read about these things. But these are known experiments. They weren't from some faraway time. So let's see it. It's a short video, about 14, 15 minutes, but I think it's well worth the watch.
Oh, hell yeah. If I can get my mouse to work, come on.
the cat's psychic ability stretch. Can you really make a dog with two heads or a human-chimpanzee hybrid? During the Soviet Union's 70-year run, their scientists got up to some seriously disturbing stuff. Keep watching to find out more. Many of the most disturbing Soviet experiments involved animals, particularly dogs. Decapitated dog heads attached to machines full of valves, tubes, meters, and electric wires. Sounds far less like government-funded science and more like the detailed daydream of a serial killer in training. What could possibly be the purpose of such an experiment? At the very least, it supposedly provided insights into open-heart surgery. At most, it was a way to investigate how to bring the clinically dead back to life.
Ryukhonenko shares the credit for the methods of human blood transfusion, which were first developed in the Soviet Union.
In the 1940 documentary, Experiments in the Revival of Organisms, researchers Sergei Brukhonenko and Boris Levinskovsky showed off their reanimation process. They removed dogs' hearts and lungs and connected them to an external machine dubbed an autoinjector to keep them alive and working. After 10 minutes, they rewired the machine back into the dog's severed heads. This reportedly gave the dogs several minutes of sustained consciousness, during which they responded to sound by wiggling their ears, blinked their eyes, and even licked their mouths. Soviet surgeon and professor Vladimir Demikov severed the heads and legs of puppies and grafted them into the still-living bodies of other larger dogs. He then tied the dog's circulatory systems together so that the larger dog's vessels fed the smaller dog, like some horrific parasitic twin. Demikov worked in East Germany during the Cold War, and using this procedure, he created roughly 20 double dog creations. Most of these poor, agonized animals died within days due to tissue rejection, as the host dog's body treated the smaller dog like an incompatible transplant. Immunosuppressants weren't widely used yet, so there was no way for Demikov to stop the host dog's immune system from combating the smaller dog's tissue. Most dogs died within days, but one duo apparently lived for a month. While alive, both dogs could move independently, as much as they could. The smaller dog still ate and lapped up water, but because it had no stomach, the food and water just sloshed out of a tube directly onto the floor. We turn to the final Soviet experiment involving dogs on our list, but certainly not the final experiment which involved tormenting animals. This time, there's no supposedly pro-social aim like heart surgery or organ transplants. The goal, brought to life during the 1970s and 80s, was to create a group of nerve agents dubbed Novichok, which is Russian for newcomer. As the BBC notes, the existence of Novichok wasn't even confirmed until the 1990s, when Dr. Veal Mozianov defected to the U.S. and brought Novichok's chemical formula with him. Novichok, it turns out, were fourth-generation nerve agents developed within a specific program under the code name Foliant. Novichok was tested on dogs stuffed into cages by the hundreds and forced to walk on tiny treadmills with gas masks strapped to their faces. The dogs were exposed to Novichok to test the nerve agent's effects, which in humans cause convulsions, coma, nausea, and vomiting, profuse sweating, shortness of breath, and eventually death. It's unknown how long these tests were conducted. It took place at the Chemical Research Institute. By 1992, the institute was abandoned. In 2018, Novichok was deployed in a terrorist attack in the UK that left 21 hospitalized. The target was former Russian double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Then Prime Minister Theresa May accused Russia of the attack, but unsurprisingly, Russian President Vladimir Putin denied it. Lest you think things couldn't get more messed up, it's time to chuck a resident from the island of Dr. Moreau onto our list of Soviet-era abominations. The Humanzee ticks a whole bunch of fundamentally reprehensible boxes. Animal torture, human rights desecration, interspecies impregnation, you name it. We're sorry to say this is exactly what it sounds like. In the 1920s, Soviet biologist Dr. Ilya Ivanovich Ivanov inseminated a female chimpanzee with human sperm in order to make a Humanzee hybrid. His goal? To create a Soviet super soldier using female chimps and human sperm. Why he thought he'd recreate the Red Guardian instead of a hairy, untrainable soldier is unknown. Come 1929, Ivanov wanted to do the opposite, impregnate human females with chimp sperm. This follow-up fell through despite his attempts to organize it, and no Humanzees were ever successfully born from the previous experiments. By all accounts, Ivanov wasn't alone in his ambitions. According to News Corp Australia, University of Albany professor Gordon Gallup claimed to have caught wind of Humanzee experiments conducted at Orange Park, Florida in the 1920s. There's no evidence to back up his claims, but Gallup stated that researchers actually succeeded. but then reconsider the moral and ethical ramifications and euthanize the infant. Gallup himself has also entertained ideas of gorillas and orangs, human gorilla and human orangutan hybrids, respectively. If history has dubbed you Dr. Death, you might have taken a wrong turn somewhere in life. Such was the case with Grigory Mironovsky, a Soviet biochemist who came to oversee the infamous Laboratory No. 1 in 1939. Laboratory No. 1 was the USSR's first official poison laboratory, opened in 1921 under the codename Special Office. While the facility would change its moniker multiple times over the years, the names such as Lab X and The Chamber, its purpose was simple. They were to create a tasteless, odorless poison which couldn't be detected in an autopsy. For this, Dr. Death needed test subjects. He turned to the Soviet gulags housing political prisoners to provide him and his cartoonishly sinister agenda with all the subjects that he needed. He administered variations of mustard gas, ricin, digitoxin, curare, and cyanide, and observed them as they suffered and died. Eventually, Dr. Death created something called carbilamine choline chloride, also known as C2. This poison had an added benefit. It bestowed calmness on its victims before they perished some 15 minutes later. The Soviet government claimed in 1955 that the lab was formally abolished. However, a KGB defector revealed numerous details about Laboratory No. 1 the following year. While admitting that KGB agents were not permitted to enter the lab or even told of its whereabouts, the defector confirmed that poisons were tested on prisoners. Eventually, Mironovsky himself was hunted by Stalin as part of a political purge. According to the book Biological Espionage, Special Operations of the Soviet and Russian Foreign Intelligence Services in the West, former KGB officer Alexander Kalsmanov claims that Laboratory No. 1 was among several laboratories reactivated in the late 1990s for the creation of biological and toxin weapons for clandestine operations in the West. It's currently unknown how many people have been killed in these experiments. We've mostly described these messed up experiments as things conducted by depraved and sociopathic scientists cackling over corpses and spliced up animals in laboratories. However, Soviet biologist Trofim Lysenko, who advised farmers on how to grow their crops, may have caused more human deaths than any individual scientist in history. Guns, cannons, plagues, poisoned gulag detainees, swaths of dead dogs, even atomic weaponry itself. Nothing took as many lives indirectly as Lysenko's food-based experiments.
There was such hunger in our village that finally cannibalism developed there.
Illiterate until the age of 13, Lysenko made his way into agriculture school following the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. He embellished some experimental results, got praise from a state-run newspaper in 1927, and was put in charge of all Soviet agriculture by the 1930s. The Soviet people and government praised him for his undereducated salt-of-the-earth authenticity and dubbed him the barefoot scientist. For his part, Lysenko didn't believe that genes existed and called such scientific knowledge reactionary and evil. He denied farmers the use of fertilizers and pesticides and outlined a new way to plant seeds based on what he called the law of the life of species. In other words, plants of various categories shouldn't, much like communist farmers themselves, compete with each other. His methodology was later adopted by communist China in the late 1950s, which led to even larger famines than what had occurred within Russia. In the end, 30 million people died of starvation because of Lysenko's real-life experimental tinkering. You wouldn't think that state-sanctioned vampirism would be one of the less ghoulish items on this list, but strangely enough it is, if only because its effects were limited to one person, project lead Alexander Bogdanov. Unlike Dr. Death, Bogdanov wasn't a secret, sinister scientist. He was a fairly well-known researcher and, of all things, a science fiction writer during the early days of the Soviet Union. He was around for the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, and in his fiction, wrote of utopias managed by automated machines that gave citizens greater liberties of labor and free time. Unfortunately, Bogdanov also believed that the blood of the young would prevent him from aging. We're not talking Elizabeth Bathory's levels of sadism. In case you need a refresher, she was a Hungarian noblewoman in the 1500s who tortured and slaughtered hundreds of female children aged 10 to 14. Though, unlike Bathory, since he only took willing participants, Bogdanov transfused the blood of 11 individuals directly into himself in a bid for immortality. As a result, he actually wound up completing some of history's first successful blood transfusions. In the 1930s, Soviet surgeon Sergei Yudin would carry the baton onward towards viable medical purposes. Incompatible blood types being what they are, Bogdanov died because of his experiments. Besides this, his test subjects all suffered from varying diseases, even tuberculosis. This next entry appears mild, but it is horrifying in its implications. Given all the aforementioned macabre and sadistic Soviet experiments conducted on animals and people, if the following research had ever gotten to a true experimental phase, it could have produced monstrosities straight out of a body horror film. In 1924, Soviet biochemist Alexander Oparin pitched what we've come to know as the primordial soup theory. Oparin believed that there was no fundamental difference between living organisms and lifeless matter. Working backwards from Darwin's theory of natural selection, Oparin outlined how the right combination of organic chemicals produced the first membraned cells in Earth's ancient oceans. He sought to overturn one of biological life's most fundamental principles: life comes from life. Oparin created artificial cells that could house enzymes, and more or less wanted to create a starter kit for life using non-living materials. He became a biochemistry teacher at Moscow State University in 1927, and was a well-respected researcher, won numerous awards, and organized the world's first international meeting of the origin of life in Moscow in 1957. While he would die without taking his research to its next organism-creating step, researcher Olga Lepinchinskaya took the baton. She claimed that dead cells produced matter that could be harvested into a vital substance used for the creation of new life. She was later proven to be a fraud. Getting back to the grotesque and absurd, we're combining two of the Soviet Union's favorite pastimes, animal torture and espionage. And this time, the espionage takes on a particularly X-Files kind of flavor.
What is it?
I think it's a cat.
As described in the original 1977 article in the New York Times by journalist Flora Lewis, Soviet expatriate August Stern worked in a secret Siberian lab investigating something called psi particles, physical, measurable particles responsible for parapsychological abilities. Now, we're not saying psi particles sound suspiciously like the midichlorians from the Star Wars prequels, but still, maybe George Lucas read this article back in the day. The Soviets investigated four discrete abilities: extrasensory perception, or ESP, telepathy, telekinesis, and clairvoyance. Stern and his team of 60 researchers were recruited from around Russia and given nearly unlimited resources to plumb the truth around the paranormal. Around the same time, the CIA would do the same thing, with their experiments eventually being cataloged in the nonfiction book The Men Who Stare at Goats by John Ronson, which was adapted into a fictionalized film in 2009. By itself, this may sound more wacky than sinister. However, in order to test their theories, Soviet researchers took to cruel absurdities. They shocked newborn kittens to see if their mothers, who were three floors above, reacted. They implanted electrodes in a mother rabbit's brain, took her babies to a submarine, and killed them one by one to see if she physically felt it. They tested photonic waves using frog eyes, placed monkeys inside powerful magnetic fields, and more. And if you're ready to get off this crazy train, we've got one last stop. Our last entry isn't a single standalone event, but rather a pervasive nationwide experiment in child education. Lorraine de la Faye, professor of history at Florida International University, has stated, "The official discourses of Bolshevism, such as work, collectivity, and modernity, also included praises of youth. The aim was to convince children of their happy childhood in the Soviet Union by producing various forms of literature, fiction, nonfiction, children's journals, and school curricula and activities. The USSR deployed their burgeoning child science to turn entire generations into experimental fodder. During the 1920s and 30s, homogenization was a key goal. Faults of character determined within children, such as deceit, laziness, and fidgeting, were placed side by side with physical conditions, psychological disorders, and mental disabilities. By 1936, an entire subdiscipline of defectology cropped up within the USSR, where those children who were considered imperfect were separated and shipped off to sanatoriums. Orphans were also included in this list. The fallout from such practices has been severe, most notably in Romania. Romania was occupied by the USSR from 1945 to 1989 and modeled itself on the Soviets right down to its communist dictator, Nicolae Ceausescu. In the aftermath of the Romanian Revolution, the world was finally made aware of the 170,000 abandoned infants, children, and teens that were being raised inside Ceausescu's network of child gulags, victims of Soviet defectology. Check out one of our newest videos right here. Plus, even more grunge videos about historical experiments are coming soon. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit the bell so you don't miss a single one.
I kind of want to throw up a little bit now.
Yeah. I don't handle animal torture. I don't do well with that, and I figured it'd be just easier to.
Yeah, no, that was a great choice for the video because it touched on the important pertinent facts, but didn't show any gross images. Yeah.
I don't understand. In some of it, though, they claim Mengele did these horrible experiments, sewed twins together, did all this shit just for funsies. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's what it seems like the Russians were doing. Why would you need to put two heads on one dog? Or put, you know, a little tiny dog's legs on a big dog? This just seems like true Frankenstein shit.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And, well, Dr. Frankenstein in the book, I don't remember if in the book he was explicitly Jewish, but one thing a lot of people, especially younger people today, don't realize is the real monster in the story was Dr. Frankenstein, not the actual, you know, Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. I had heard that one thing I wanted, there were a couple of points I wanted to mention just from the video. I forgot about it, but I have heard about the whole where they would take the kids and what was it, defectology or something like that. I'd heard about that going on in Romania before. I just don't think I realized or connected the dots that had started in Soviet Russia. That's nuts to me. I worked with a Romanian person years ago, and they said something about growing up, how kids would just be taken away for shit. It was crazy.
I'm assuming so they can keep they thought communism could continue on if they made people think that it made them happy.
I guess. Like mass level brainwashing. Basically, they were trying to like give them Stockholm Syndrome, I guess. Oh, we identify with you. We're all happy communists now. Yay. The Hugh Manzi thing, I mean, I kind of wanted to facepalm because it seems so ludicrous. But what's disturbing is they actually tried that. But it made me remember there was a story. Now, this would have been pre-World War I era. At one point, there was supposedly this village where they found this ape woman. And like, they married her off to one of the villagers. And she supposedly had kids. And I'm like, you know, how long did they actually try to do this? How long were the Jews fucking chimps in Russia? Did this start sooner than we thought?
Yeah. Well, I've seen, I don't think it was a chick. I think it was a male that looked in his face. He looked very much like a monkey. Not just a nigger monkey, but I'm talking about like a real monkey. It's like, I just wouldn't be surprised. And I think their genetics are closer to chimpanzees and primates than ours. Maybe it's close enough in certain some of them to take them on. Oh, and one comment too is I don't believe the shit they say about Bathory. I think it's exaggerated myself, but
she's an interesting historical figure. That's one of those ones where I don't know if we're ever going to know for sure, but I have wondered the same. Just because, like, look at the mythos that built up around the real Dracula, Vlad Tepes. You know, you look at it from one eye and you're like, oh my God, this crazy motherfucker. And then you look at it with both eyes and you realize he single-handedly stopped the onslaught of the Ottoman Empire in Europe for a period of time.
Right.
So it's like, was he vilified because he was stopping something others wanted to happen? And the same could very well be true of Bathory. But I don't know. It's been a while since I studied Bathory.
Maybe we'll have to do a stream on her.
We could play a game of historical figures. Were they Jew or not?
Oh, that could be fun. That could be fun.
That could be a lot of fun. And never forget Project Esther.
Yes, that is essentially they're going to censor us. They're going to use people to try to talk us into censoring us, right?
Project Esther, that's where they marry Yentas into ruling families or rich families. as much as possible. And historically, yeah, it's called Project Esther because of the story of Esther in the Bible, where basically this one Middle Eastern king, you know, had this big beauty competition, and the most beautiful woman, of course, you know, the Jews sent Esther because then she could, you know, whisper in the king's ear and get him to give her people all these favors. And we've seen this happen historically in other ways too.
Oh, I think I have heard about that. And then like they woke up and she had a bunch of them. Well, she had the Gentiles killed, right? She had some people killed. I can't remember.
Esther,
I will have to look further into that. I know she's a Jew.
Yeah, I don't Esther remember was a that Jew. Part. I think she did, you know, cause death in some capacity, whether it was just encouraging him to kill one group to save her people. And that was the big thing. Oh, you have to save my people. You have to, always with the Victim Act. Then there was the story of Dinah in the Bible, where some local prince laying fell in love with Dinah, the little, you know, Yenta girl, and basically snatched her up and married her, like ran off with her. And the Jews were like, oh, you took her. You can't have her. And well, look, I really love her. I want to keep her. Okay. If every man in your city agrees to get circumcised tonight, we'll let the marriage stand. So of course all the men have to get circumcised. And while they're writhing in pain, the Jews come in and kill them. Aren't they great?
There's so much out there. There's so much we just don't know. I feel like I learn one thing and then I see something else and it's like, oh, I'm going to have to go down another hole for that one. And
yeah. It's another string on the conspiracy board, you know.
Yes. It's never ending.
It is never ending. There's always more atrocities to uncover with them.
So see, this whole Trump thing. No, I don't get it much into domestic politics. It's WWE. Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage.
Yep.
And Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Give me some fun times. I used to love watching the matches. And that's what it is today, but just not as much fun. But I did find it interesting that someone made a collection of people tweeting, oh, I don't want to hear another peep about Trump making his own ballroom. I don't want to hear a peep about this. And it's like, so then is this, no, it was a horrible false flag. It didn't live up to its potential, all because you wanted to justify a ballroom. So come midterms, people will like you again.
The shooting attempt?
Yes, yes. You can't tell me that you have this huge event room and security does not sweep it before anyone walks in. Uh-huh. And this nigger mutt just happens to be standing in a fucking closet.
Well, didn't this nigger supposedly come all the way from California on trains?
Yes,
with a long gun and a pistol. Like, come on. I've traveled on Amtrak. It's been a number of years, but even that long ago, it was already like they wanted to look in your bags. They want, like, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I took a train from here up to Canada. It was like an 11-hour or 12-hour ride. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they check you for weapons. So none of it makes sense. None of it. And it's like, it was a piss poor psych op anyways. It's like psyop anyways. We're a little bit better than that. We deserve better, you know? Oh, he didn't even get a bullet out before they killed him. Well, at least get him, you know, let him take someone out and then be like, oh, and then he died in a hail of bullets.
One thing, the one clip I saw, it was from the one angle where, you know, the camera's here and then, you know, they got the table set up and here's Vance and then Trump's down here at this table. And then these guys come in and they grab Vance by the back of his jacket and basically like yeet him out of the chair and run him off and then come back for Trump.
Did you see Cash Patel just sitting there like, can we get some more food? I got to take shit. Is right here okay? Yeah. He just didn't care. And there were, you know, saw a couple Jews grabbing bottles and still eating their food. It's like, they even know this shit's fake. It's like, All right, go play in your fucking wall, White House ballroom now, I guess. And yeah. You can't complain that they spent millions on something that was absolutely not necessary.
Yep. You're absolutely right. You called it. It was to quiet all the bad press. And I mean, look, the first assassination attempt that happened in Butler, Pennsylvania, happened just when his numbers were not doing so well in the last campaign. Right. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, Trump, he survived a shooting. Really?
I really think we're beyond this now. Just stop with the tricks. Just stop. Just fucking do it. We all know you're going to. Or maybe they're a little afraid of consequences, but so yeah. Be it.
It's Reaper's like General Hospital soap opera for political scum. Yes. Well, it's yeah. What it is. It's you know, this has been a concept from probably even earlier than this, but, you know, just off the top of my head, Rome, Roman Empire, the Colosseum, bread and circus to appease the masses.
Mm-hmm.
We're still seeing it today. Only, you know, they frown upon it if you actually chuck people in with lions now, apparently. So now we just got to come up with all this other bullshit.
But they've already admitted. I saw in some article that this conflict with Iran was for our ally Israel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, paraphrasing it. It's yeah. Like, I just don't get why people are still standing by for it. They're still sending their children to this country to die for it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I honestly can't fathom what it would actually take to wake even half these people up. Your children dying in a foreign country isn't enough to wake you up.
I think with many of them, there are some that I think can still be woken up. That maybe just for whatever reason, just haven't had the capacity to really think about it in depth as of yet. But unfortunately and frighteningly, I think there's more people that they do get it. They do get this on some level, and either they just don't care because it's inconvenient for them to follow that thought process, or they've just decided it's not worth it. It's not worth the fight. And I'm like, well, you know what? Just go take yourself out of the gene pool then.
Well, I mean, you make sense. You make sense. We know that revolutions only start with a mere few percentage of the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adolf Hitler, so and how many in the beer hall?
Yeah.
There was like 8 of them. You know? So, we can do that. There's more than 8 of us, right?
Yeah.
Ian Fashbird leading the next revolution. Please don't put me in charge. Please don't put me in charge. It will not go well.
No, I wanted to be the knot tier. I wanted to hold the rope. So we're going to need someone else to be in charge, but I just really wanted to hold the rope.
Well,
wrote my name down. I already wrote my name down on the list.
All right. I think the chat would agree with me that Fash should definitely be the knot tier in chief. Yes.
I'll take that, yes.
Oh, my God. Mostly, I don't want to be in charge because it's like I'm already in charge of too many things, and, like, I'm just going to get even crankier. Nobody wants to deal with a cranky salty. Arian Eagle will tell you that. Especially if it's pre-coffee salty. That's scary.
Oh, well, of course.
I don't count as human before my coffee. But yeah, it's all political theater. I call every election cycle Zaphod-Beeblebrox syndrome. And for those of you that are aware of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you'll get that reference. But, oh, hey, there you go. In the book, Zaphod-Beeblebrox had 2 heads and 3 arms. So, you know, maybe he was just like a space Russian.
Possibly. Possibly. But I suppose I'd take 2-headed dogs over Human Z anytime.
Yes, Human Z. Oh my God, that was just... I think the one in that video that disturbed me the most was the... Because it was like a guy started it and then a Yenta continued the research about like trying to distill some sort of cells from dead bodies.
Yes.
That one was disturbing.
I bet you could probably ask any 7th or 8th grader out there. Mm-hmm. can two animals create a new life? And yeah. Obviously, you would expect them to say, well, no. I don't understand how anyone, I guess, well, beyond a retarded leftist would say, you can make a living organism from a dead material. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense.
Nope. That's how you get zombie invasions.
Yeah.
Best case scenario. Best case scenario.
Well, they can't. Well, no. I'm sorry. The one in the mall did show us they can procreate. But I think she was pregnant before she became a zombie, though. But the baby did come out a zombie. Yeah. So,
I mean, with zombies, all you really got to remember is kill it with fire.
Fire, yeah. In a gun to the head. You got to kill the brain. They're just eating machines.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're
true.
Just eating machines, you know? Kind of like niggers. No soul God. In their eyes. They're just walking around dumb as fuck. And
yeah, there you go. Niggers are the zombies, and the fucking kikes are the necromancers controlling them.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. Oh, my. Well, I think that's all we got for tonight for everyone, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to leave next week a mystery for the class,
yes.
Right? And then and I will figure out what we want to surprise them with. The power. We got a nigger tower going on over in 88.
Love to see it. Aryan power.
Woot. All right, well, let us say howdy and so long to everybody over here on 88. We had an Otter's Ghost 88. I wonder who that is. Coondog, Kermy, Reaper hanging out in the chat over there tonight. I think that was everybody. I don't think there was anyone else hanging. Oh, Mike Minery was there for a brief moment as well. Of course, we had a couple listening along on Crewbot. So, Joseph, Aryan Eagle, woot. Good to have you listening. And then over here on FTJ, we had Joseph Thomas E. Dwyer, Riot Earth, The Woodsman, Sniper's Ghost, Kermy, Aryan Eagle, Miss Hitler, Fashbird herself, Filthy, Snail Racer, Jewfinder General, Unobtrusive. It's funny, not everybody pops up on the little sidebar thingy sometimes. Now I got to scroll and make sure I got everybody. I think I got everybody. I don't think I missed you. If I missed you, bad salty, no cookies. So, Red Fred popped in. /everybody. You guys, as ever, have been freaking fantastic. And tomorrow is last Tuesday of the month. We are doing sort of we're going to keep doing the white networking thing on the last Tuesday of each month, and got something cooking up about content specific. It's content about content. It's going to be a bit of a surprise. I'm pulling this one out, you know, at the last minute. And then, of course, Wednesday we have Ash and Ether, and the third episode in our series about fate and all of that jazz. So come by the chats, check it out, say hi. It's always a good time. I'm funny. Maybe not ha-ha funny. Maybe it's point and laugh funny, but I'll take it, right?
You always come out with quality stuff. I recommend all of her streams.
Aw, thank you, sister.
Of course you will.
Sister is my actual sister. Sister Fash is my actual sister from completely different parents entirely, and I'm here for that. So,
oh, same.
Let me get the music queued up for the outro, then everybody scurry your way on to your next streaming stop. Y'all know where to go. I'm not going to tell y'all what to do. You're smart people. You'll figure it out. Alrighty. Get this up on the screen.
Thank you, yes. And white power.
White fucking power. Totally. Total Aryan victory.
There's a little secret that you may not know. But if you don't figure it out, you will never grow. So let me put it in a nutshell so that you can see the tiny hats' destruction of humanity. They start the wars.
Tiny hats.
They killed our Lord.
Tiny hats.
They gave us usury.
Tiny hats.
And pornography. They cause inflation.
Tiny hats.
And immigration.
Tiny hats.
Slavery.
Tiny hats.
Social depravity. Communism.
Tiny hats.
Genocide. They cause the famines across the world. They turn little boys into little girls. Torture children just for fun. Vaccinated everyone.
They own your education through manipulation. They rewrote history
to make them look like they're not guilty. System scam.
So everything you thought you knew.